Thanks for tuning in to Best Show Ever, a podcast presented by the Engler Theater. Welcome to the season 4 finale episode. We knew we'd have to make this one extra special, so we asked one of our own, one of our very best, to join us today. That's right. We'll be talking to the man, the myth, the legend, Craig Owsley, aka Ortega La Trobe. Let's get into it. Craig Owsley is not only the box office lead for the Englert, he's also been doing security, admissions, and bartending for music venues across town for almost 30 years now. You may recognize him as the face at the door of the Englert, Gabe's, and even the late Mill. He also runs a YouTube channel called Project 33 Video, perhaps best known for the program Snackin' with Ortega. He's a huge wrestling fan, a former frontman in a band, and as you'll hear, an awesome conversationalist.
All right.
Craig.
Yes.
It is so exciting to finally have you on the Best Show Ever podcast. It's been a long time coming. So you are a man of many passions. Wrestling, snacking, being an all-around cool dude. But I want to focus specifically today on your history in Iowa City's music scene and your work as door guy.
Okay.
So let's start from the beginning of the Iowa City experience. What brought you to Iowa City, and what did the early years here look like for you?
So I moved up here in May of 1994. I was in a band, and where we're from, original music is just not a thing, really. It's getting more so now, you know, 30 years later or whatever. But it just wasn't going to be beneficial to us as a band to be there. Had some friends up here, had came up here to go to a lot of shows at Gabe's, was familiar with like Sludge, Plow, House of Large Sizes, Voodoo Gear Ship, some of the older, more prominent names if you're of an age. And I'd come up to shows a lot, just like, this is like, it spoke to me. I literally remember the first time I walked in Gabe's. I was probably 19 years old, and I got to the top of the steps, and it was just like a revelation of like, oh my God, this place does exist. And all I could ever liken it to is in the movie Valley Girl. There's the scene where the Valley Girl goes to the rock club with Nick Cage and his buddy at first, and the Plimsolls are on stage, and there's a dude with the mohawk, and a guy, you know, breaks a bottle over his head or whatever. And when I walked into Gabe's, and I'm like, this is that bar. And so that really helped draw me into doing the band thing, and realizing, even though I'm from a town of 800 people, that no one that I can think of has ever really done anything, that you can escape that, and you can go do, and it's not like we were, you know, famous or anything, but I did get to tour. I went all over the country doing stuff, so there was that. But back to Iowa City. Got here, was a familiar enough face at Gabe's when I moved up here that I got a door job instantly. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I figure I can count money and say, you're welcome, and check an ID. So I did. Did that for a long time. Ended up bartending down there for 13 years, first time. I am on my fourth tenure at Gabe's at this point as an employee, doing door on occasion.
I want to get back to that, but first, will you tell me about what your band was like?
I had a band called Skrid. We were loud, very loud, painfully loud. Doug Roberson once referred to us as a wall of sound.
Perfect.
And we kind of would fall, I guess, into that. Like, it was heavy, and it was aggressive, but it wasn't metal.
What was the performance energy like? Or what was their stage antics?
Violent clowns. the band themselves never, like, you know, no one ever got into get-ups or anything like that. I was constantly, like, going to Goodwills or Salvation Armies and, like, finding the most stupid, stupid outfits I could find. The first night my mother ever saw me on stage, I was in a long woman's jacket that was, like, had orange and gold and brown. It was very Joseph's Technicolor Dreamcoat-looking thing that I had found, in a pink bowler. But underneath of that was just me in a fluorescent orange jockstrap and fishnets and boots.
Oh, my Lord.
With a bucket of chicken.
Not what I was envisioning.
They're just not necessarily trying to be weird, but just, I'm not a singer. Never was. Vocalist, yes. Mm-hmm. Front man, yes.
Yep.
Entertaining, apparently, because people would tell me this. And so it's not that I, you know, I'm perfectly comfortable with my voice. It fit perfectly for what we were doing, but I was never going to be able to stand there off in the corner and hit some note that made somebody's eye tear up.
Right.
You know, I'm never going to be in the Righteous Brothers.
Yeah.
I read a quote. I can't remember who said it. I want to say it was Iggy Pop, but I'm probably wrong on that. But it just said, rock and roll is a contact sport.
Mm,
and I'm like,
that hits.
I like that. I like that a lot. So it got to be where, like, we'd be on stage and all of a sudden I have blood pouring down my face. And people are like, how do you do that? And I'm like, I cut my face. And so he's like, why would you do that for like 12 people? I'm like, because anybody can stand here and sing. Mm-hmm. I wanted to put on, you know, and I have bled buckets all over this. there was a lot of sweat and spit because I sang really hard. So there was lots of bile. And I often would vomit during shows because I was screaming so hard that it would basically just kind of vacuum up. The very last show Skrid played, I used an entire roll of barbed wire throughout Gabe's. Like, I ran it through the ceiling. I ran it around the mic stands. I wrapped our drummer's drums in it. And by the end of the night, and I started the show in a suit. Mm-hmm. I ended it in a ragged clothes, completely wrapped up in barbed wire and, you know, holes everywhere. And like one eyelid pulled up because there's a prong holding it there. And I'm like, man, this is going to suck if I screw this up, isn't it?
Wow. Okay. Well, that was more than I was expecting.
Well,
I think, you know, I did hear something about a wrestling move or a chair or something.
Oh, that was the second band, Kita.
Oh.
So after Skrid died, we were together for like 7 or 8 years, and it just got to be, I think it got to a point where we started to not like each other. Mm-hmm. And kill the band, save the friendship kind of thing.
Happens.
And I remember implicitly stating, I am never going to be in a band with Bronson Caref or John Hopkins again in my life. Mm. I was in a band with both of them at last. Me and my friend Brandon Gaspin started screwing around writing some stuff, and Bronson heard it, and then he came down and joined in with us, and we had that for a while. Then Bronson stepped out, and John Hopkins, he stepped in. So we carried on and did a thing for about 5 or 6 years, and it was all good. And it just got to be, we were like, John was getting so busy with his other two bands and doing sound and everything that it just was making it difficult to do. And rather than try and bring somebody else into the fold, it's just like, you know what, let's just. And at that time, I was about ready to move back home and take my dad's bar over. So it kind of came along at the right time. But the last Kita show, there were, we knew we were leaving, you know, we were quitting, whatever. And then again, implying that wrestling thing. So on the stage, I am completely talking trash. I'm like, the only reason we're breaking up is because there's not a band in town who can touch us. You know, that whole, we're the best. There's no reason for us to even do anything because no one can even come close. There's not any competition, so why stick around with this? Mark Shields, who was in Burnout, and Kevin Kopas, who was in a band called The Tanks, both frontmen in bands, both big wrestling fans. So I sat down and talked with him. I'm like, I'm going to just crap all over you guys tonight. Understand this, I'm going to be vile, but at the end of the night, the door's going to be propped open, and I'm going to set up a table. We're going to set it on fire and cover it in tacks and broken glass, and you can come through and throw me through it. And so, end of the show, I have this table gimmick set up, and I have, like, you know, 20, 30 broken bottles I dumped on it, 200 thumbtacks, metal folding chair that I've put a bunch of alcohol in a 151 and set it on fire. And so I'm just like, you know, hey, look at the fire build. Those guys came through the back door, spun me around. Kevin Kopas executes a perfect gut kick to me. Both picked me up and through the door. I was not supposed to catch on fire, but I did briefly.
Craig! Oh, man. Do you miss those days or are you...
You know, I don't... It's like, I mean, I would love to... If someone said, hey, man, you want to sing in a band? I'd be like, yes, I will find time to do that right now. Let us do that. And I would, and that's not because this band required that front man or this, you know, like a different persona or whatnot. That's just who I am. And so that's what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
Even today at 52 years old, that's what you would get. I don't know that my body could handle it so much anymore, but right. That's a bridge I would cross when I got to it. And like I will talk about this. Like, man, it's some of the best fun I had in my life. Like I said, it wasn't like we were playing for thousands of people or anything, but man, I got friends all over the country. I got, when I was a kid in that little crappy small town of 800 people, Chicago was maybe another, you know, another planet. Mm-hmm. New York City was just something I read about in books. It, you know, it may have not even been real. Mm-hmm. And I remember, you know, getting, I'm like, holy crap, man, this place is only 17 hours away. I can drive here in a day. Yeah. And, you know, and so I got, and like, it was a cool thing also, like being in the band, I'm not stuck going and doing these touristy things. I'm actually experiencing that town and the people who live there and their cultures and stuff and like food instead of just, oh, we went to New York, we went to the Statue of Liberty, and then we went to where, oh, 9/11, never forget, we went down there too. And it's just, that thing is like, especially where I live, that lack of life experience leads to a lack of life knowledge, I guess. Mm-hmm. And people down there do not have enough cultural osmosis to have a really valid opinion about what's going on in the rest of the world, because there is no rest of the world there. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad that I got to go out and experience this. That I, you know, I've got keys to a house in Cleveland. I've got keys to a house in Baltimore, just because I got friends there. I don't need them. They may not even work at this point. Mm-hmm. It very much helped me grow as a person. Even though, you know, going from different city to city and just the little things that are different, and there's not a whole lot, but there is. And it was just a wonderful learning and life experience. And, you know, it was like, it wasn't ever about money. Like, I remember going back to a class reunion, it was like, oh man, you must be rich. I'm like, no. Yeah. That tour cost me $1,800 out of my pocket.
Yeah.
I'm sick of McDonald's. But it was, you know, that's the thing for me. I don't care if it's you're going to a band, you're a painter, you're a writer. If you go into it for the sole purpose of trying to make money, you're doing it for the wrong reasons. And I doubt you will ever succeed. And if you do, I wish nothing but bad things on you, because you don't deserve it, because you're doing it wrong.
We'll be right back in conversation with Craig after a quick word from our development director, Katie Roche.
The Englert Theater has been a cultural leader in our community for generations, and we want to make sure that the Englert continues to impact our community in a positive way for years to come. You can help ensure our place in the future of this community by joining our Fellowship for the Future program. By making a fellowship gift commitment, we lay down the sturdy foundation we need to grow and make even bigger community impacts. If you are excited about a future for Iowa City that has a thriving and innovative arts community, please consider our leadership level membership group, the Fellowship for the Future. Invest $100 per month or more for a 3-year period at englert.org/fellowship, or contact us to talk more about what we can build together.
Like we've mentioned, you've been in the industry here for a long time. You've been doing door at shows for a long time, aka you've heard thousands upon thousands of bands in Iowa City. Can you talk about the way you've seen the Iowa City music scene evolve over time?
Yeah, it's weird. And especially, like, if I'd have been here, say, 5 years, 7 years, wouldn't be as noticeable. Being here for 28... Mm-hmm. That's another reason. One of the reasons we came here is, like, at the time we moved up here, I was already driving up here 2 or 3 times a month, like 2 hours each way, just to see shows. And it was just because it was a central location, and Gabe's had such a reputation that everybody wanted to play there. I mean, Gabe's to me is on that First Avenue, 7th Street entry / I will even go as far as to say CBGB's level of, and of course, New York City's going to have more infamy, I guess. But for here, I remember being on tour and stuff. You're like, oh, Iowa City, Gabe's. Those steps suck.
Yep.
Like, and everybody knew those steps, everybody how bad it was. But everybody was always like, man, it ripped. It was awesome. Everybody there was cool. The bar treated us awesome. And being part of that on two different sides was really nice. At that time, it seemed way more vibrant and full than it is now. And I mean, also society has changed. People had to go see bands back then. Mm-hmm. Now you're just like, oh, I don't like that. You look on your phone, I don't like it. And see, that then it takes a lot away from the experience, because a lot of times, man, I've listened to a lot of bands I didn't like, but I saw them live. I'm like, they kicked.
Yep.
I was like, oh, man. We were, that's my band, I think, like, we got asked to be, some label said, oh, send us a demo. So we did, like, what the hell is this? I'm like, we can't put that on a record.
Yeah.
Just so it sometimes it just doesn't translate. But there were just all the band dudes all hung out down at Gabe's. I mean, it's similar to that now, but like I don't feel that there's as many bands right now. Mm-hmm. And I think just, again, as society, that it's kind of drifted away from there being a ton of people doing that. There's a lot of people who are like way into video games now that weren't because they're so accessible. Just whatever. The internet itself, it's like the time that you would spend learning how to play guitar, writing songs to your friends, people are, you know, building code and making apps or whatever. So it's, and I'm not saying this is a bad thing by any means, but it's just there are so many more options for people that fewer people are making music. So there's just not as many bands and stuff out there. Like I said, when I moved here, did that, and then there was a huge dip for a while where it was just, what are there? Where did the bands go? Mm-hmm. Right now, there's a lot of stuff. I mean, there's not a lot of bands I'm into that like trip my trigger, but there's stuff that that I see, and I know, like I know this is good for what it, you know, for its thing.
Yeah.
It's like there's a lot of bands that come here through the Englert, and it's like, this is not my thing, but I know good when I see good. There's like, I mean, like yourself, Anthony Worden, Dan Padley, Ross Clouser, like the people that I'd be on, the younger musicians, but like all you guys are all really good and you have such like degrees of stuff, but then it works together. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really cool how like you got someone over here and over here, but then they'll make a project together.
Yeah.
And that's just a way that everybody gets their stuff out. The more stuff that's out there, the better.
Because
there's more stuff. There's more stuff for people to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe more people will listen to it.
Yeah, I'm glad that you made that note too, because I feel like that's what I've been noticing is the cross-pollination of a lot of people. Like Alex Russ singing R&B with like jazz musicians backing him up. Like, I think that's really cool.
You know,
and
look, Blake Shaw is a perfect example of like, what hat you want me to put on today, bro?
Yeah. Yep. Blake's going to be playing with
you. You want me to do the stand-up thing and sing nice and jazzy? You want me to play some rock and roll? I can do that, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a really cool thing that we have going on here as well. This is our last question, and it's the toughest one. What has been your favorite Iowa City arts experience or live event experience?
I can tell you one specifically was here at the Englert the year that we had Father John Misty for Mission Creek. That guy's album sounds great, and those are really great songs, but I'm doing security, and I'm standing at the front of the stage, and it's like where I can see the stage off to my right, but I'm watching the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that I've ever been at a show where I could watch. I've probably been in a crowd like this, but like seeing it and like watching these kids' faces, just like, if you ever see the old Beatles footage where the girls are like screaming and stuff, like that's literally what I'm watching, but it's dudes. That night, every girl wanted to be with Father John Misty, and every dude wanted to be Father John Misty.
Yeah.
I saw a kid cry because he was so happy. And seeing that and recognizing that moment, like, so cool to see it.
Yeah.
But then just, like, watching this room full of people all in this moment and just all happy and enjoying it, and was just like, man, I go... And it was this thing where it's mildly selfish, I guess, on my part, to where I'm just like, this is so awesome. Like, these kids have no idea how much work goes into making something like this happen.
Mm-hmm.
But then I start thinking, like, man, look what we did.
Mm-hmm.
And like, see, I'm getting choked up now. It's like we did this. We did this. This organization, me and my friends, we all put, and like, that's really powerful. And just as like say a music fan, there's been a lot, and a lot of it is, you know, getting to seeing a band that you like idolize and like follow and like emulate somewhat, playing a show with them and becoming friends with them.
An alternate last question based on that: what has being a door person and arts administrator in Iowa City for so long, what has that taught you about community?
I feel that, like, everybody, when they come to the door, whatever, they're coming to the door, they all have their lives out there, and they're all different people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Once you come through that door to a show, and you're in that show, then you're, this is that community. So, every audience is its own little community,
mm-hmm.
because you're all there for the same reason.
Mm-hmm.
And just the other night, we had this ABBA tribute band here,
mm-hmm.
and I was mad how much I liked it.
Oh, you sure?
I wasn't nearly as mad about how much I liked it as Grace was mad about how much I liked it. But it was a thing. And, like, it's a perfect, oh, this ties us together so well. It's amazing. So I go in and I'm watching this. And, like, yeah, they're all, like, you know, Broadway actors and that kind of thing. But they are note on with these songs. And, like, I'm watching this crowd and there's only 200 people here, but all 200 people are singing along and they're like, got their arms up dancing. And I look over to my left and I see a little dude that's like maybe 6 years old and an old man holding hands and they're both dancing. And I'm like, oh my God, the beginning and the end and the generational gap of all that and how that just touched that whole timeline.
Yeah.
Oh, it was so good. Because at that moment, there was no Donald Trump. There was no war in the Ukraine. Mm. There was no one even cell phones up. No one even had their phones up taking pictures. And it was so awesome because everybody was just in the moment together. And it was such a good energy. It was so positive. I'm like, this, God, can we take this and make it bigger and spread it all over everything like jelly.
Yeah.
Joy jelly, man.
Joy jelly. Well, there you have it.
With ginseng.
And with that, we're full circle. Craig, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to do this.
Absolutely.
On a day off. And we love you at the Englert.
So. I love the Englert having me here.
Yeah.
It's a thing where it's like, I worked a lot of jobs. And again, when I do something, I try and do it as absolutely best I can. And oftentimes, as all of us who have been employees know, that you will put all this effort in. It's like, and I don't need patted on the back. I don't want patted on the back. But when all you ever get in response is like, well, you screwed this up. You did this wrong.
Yeah.
This theater has done nothing, but it makes me appreciate myself more because I'm appreciated here by, and I know this, and I it touches me. Where this is the first time I've worked someplace where I was just like, where I felt that. And, you know, there was some stuff a few years ago. I had a lot of personal issues and I took some time away from here. And rather than just turning their back, the Englert embraced me and they helped me get through some stuff. And I mean, I'll forever be thankful for that. And it's a rarity, I think, for anybody to get that positive feedback from whatever line of work they do. Mm-hmm. But here it's constantly given to you and it's, I have never been happier working any place in my life. Wow. On a personal, emotional level.
Well, that's good to hear. I have a similar sentiment. Well, thanks, Craig.
Thank you.
Again, season finale.
Support for this podcast comes from Friends of the Englert and Fellowship for the Future members. Learn more at englert.org/friends. Ongoing support is provided by the National Endowment for the Arts and the Iowa Arts Council. Our intro music is Free the Bull